content of this program is intended for people who are blind or print impaired. Hello, this is Katie Neuhauser for the North Carolina Reading Service, and this is Religion in the News. For the next half hour, I will be reading to you from Religion News Service. And our first article for today is entitled, For Doug Wilson's Neighbors, CNN Documentary, A Reminder, Moscow is Christian Nationalism's Ground Zero. Joanne Muneta expected to be angry, as she usually is, when a major news outlet turns its cameras on Pastor Doug Wilson and the Christian nationalist movement growing in her backyard. But after watching CNN's latest documentary air, the 90-year-old Moscow activist felt something she hadn't expected. "I was so sad after it was over," said Monita, who has lived in Moscow for 65 years and is chair of the Lata County Human Rights Task Force. "I usually get angry, but this time I was just so sad." CNN anchor and chief investigative correspondent Pamela Brown's hour-long documentary, The Rise of Christian Nationalism, aired on The Whole Story with Anderson Cooper. It was Brown's second major report on Wilson, whose reach now extends from his Christchurch pulpit in Moscow to the halls of power in Washington. For many in Moscow's surrounding Palouse region, their reaction was familiar, even when the emotions were not. The episode included accounts from women who are former members of Christian nationalist congregations, sharing stories of religious trauma, rigid gender roles, and, in some cases, abuse. For Muneta, it was those women whose stories cut deepest. "I'm sad for those women who are traumatized," she said. "I'm sad for the children being brought up, and I'm sad for our country that has to put up with this when we have better things to be doing." She paused on a phrase from the documentary, "religious trauma." Two words, she said, that should never belong together. The Reverend Hannah Brown, pastor of the United Church of Moscow, moved to town last year, knowing she'd be leading a congregation in the shadow of a movement that claims the same faith while arriving at radically different conclusions. "It's not just a Christian nation, it's their version of what a Christian nation is," Brown said. "It's a very specific, very conservative, very fundamentalist version of what Christianity is. As someone who leads a church and calls myself a Christian, that's not the Christianity that I believe." The documentary gave Brown and Muneta specific examples to grapple with. Wilson has publicly described his belief in a patriarchal society where women are called to marry, bear numerous children, and submit to their husbands as spiritual authority. Women are also banned from leadership positions in this church. Before I go on, I just want to make sure we know that this is Moscow, Idaho, not Russia. This is in the United States. Okay, Sierra McIlwain, a former military member who attends a Texas congregation connected to Wilson's network, described her own transformation as an example of that theology at work. "All of the self-dependent, self-reliance, all of the military stuff, none of them have even come close to how challenging and rewarding being a wife and a mother is, submitted under Christ," she said in the CNN interview. Brown was struck by one woman's testimony in the documentary, a former member of a Christian nationalist church, described on the show as the belief that a nation's laws and government should promote Christian values. "It is a privilege to be a wife and a mother," the woman said, "but it's not a privilege if you're forced to be one. If it is a woman's choice to stay at home and to be a wife and a mother, and that is something she finds fulfilling, power to her," Brown said. "But when that choice is taken away, that is not freedom." Muneta, who came of age during the women's rights movement, finds Wilson's worldwide view a deliberate erasure. She cited a quote she has kept from Wilson's writing. Women inescapably need godly masculine protection against ungodly masculine harassment. Women who refuse protection from their fathers and husbands must seek it from the police. But women who generally insist on no masculine protection are really women who tacitly agree on the propriety of rape. All the effort and pride from the 20s to the 50s to get women's suffrage, Mineta said, and they're just going to say, oh, we didn't mean that. The documentary featured Jonah Kirby, a Texas church member, describing what he called household federalism, the idea that the family, rather than the individual, should be the basic unit of civic representation, with the husband casting a single household vote. When Brown pressed on whether this would require repealing the 19th Amendment, Kirby suggested a middle road. I think maybe amend the amendment. David Goodwin, president of the Association of Classical Christian Schools, also makes an appearance on the episode to represent Wilson's long-held conviction that secular institutions should never be entrusted with the education of Christian children. I think it is a sin, because in most cases the education is coming from the state, said Goodwin, and that was not what God intended from the beginning. They don't raise children in the fear and admonition of the Lord. Wilson's Logos School in Moscow, founded in 1981 to offer a grammar, logic, and rhetoric curriculum rooted in Reformed theology, has served as the model for Goodwin's national organization. For Mineta, who spent decades watching Moscow's public schools shape generations of independent, curious kids, the statement was both new and clarifying. When I think of all the teachers who devote their careers to bringing up children who think for themselves, who have confidence, who are kind, she said, they want to erase that. And on pluralism, Christ Church Moscow member E.J. Ripple told Brown, we cannot ultimately live together in harmony with conflicting worldviews. Mineta wrote that one down. From Mineta, there's a gap between how national coverage tends to frame Wilson as a rising, ominous force and the reality on the ground in Moscow, where residents have been living with his influence for decades. Wilson has been expanding his evangelical church in Moscow since the 1970s into what is now an international network of more than 150 churches, as well as Christian schools, a college, and a publishing company. His church community in Idaho has roughly doubled in size since 2019. But Mineta is quick to point out what the camera doesn't always catch. Moscow votes 3-1, sometimes 4-1, against Christ Church-affiliated candidates in local elections. That, she said, is almost never covered. Moscow is Doug Wilson's town? No, she said, that's not true. She described a counter-movement that isn't formally organized, but is very much alive. Indivisible Chapters, the Human Rights Task Force, the Moscow Interfaith Association, groups that have, if anything, grown closer because of Wilson's presence. When the pandemic hit, mainline Moscow churches organized a mutual aid network to care for the elderly and vulnerable, while Christ Church defied lockdown orders and held an outdoor protest in September 2020. This year, a Moscow interfaith gathering is being planned tentatively for May 7th, National Day of Prayer, with music, poetry, and scripture readings centered on love. The answer to what Doug Wilson is saying is to show how people can work together, Mineta said, and that love is the answer. Brown said her congregation has been watching Christian nationalism encroach not just locally, but nationally, and that fear is understandable. But it's not the only option. I'm angry about it. I'm sad, but I'm not scared, she said. And I think in a time like this, being able to step in and say, I'm not okay with this, but I'm also not scared. That is something that is comforting for people. It doesn't have to be us versus them, she said. I care about this community. I care about all people. What does it look like to care for people no matter what they're coming from? That includes, she emphasized, people still inside Christ Church. The documentary showed women helping former members leave and rebuild. Brown called it an opportunity for the wider community to be available as neighbors and as safe places. I'm hopeful that this exposure will help people recognize the signs of Christian nationalism in their own spaces, she said. And I'm hopeful that we'll begin to see a lot of people who are in Christian nationalist churches as victims in some ways, and that there's a lack of understanding and maybe a move toward greater compassion. What the CNN documentary made clear, Munetta said, is that Moscow is just the most visible front in a much broader battle. It shows that the church is out to undermine democracy everywhere in this country, she said, referring to Christchurch. And we had better learn what our treasures of democracy are. Freedom to vote, freedom to have public schools, freedom to have libraries, freedom to choose our own lifestyle, harmony with our neighbors. Those are the things we get from democracy. Munetta, for her part, believes Moscow will endure. Christchurch can own every brick on Main Street, she said, but it'll never own the soul of Moscow because it's too strong and it's too loving. And this is the end of the first article for today. And our next article is a pretty big change of pace from the first one. This one's entitled, Taylor Tomlinson's Netflix Special is Too Ungodly for Many Churches. This one welcomed her. My iPhone started capitalizing the G in God again without asking me, Taylor Tomlinson says in her latest Netflix stand-up special, gripping a mic beneath the ornate ceiling of Fountain Street Church in Grand Rapids, Michigan. The robots are coming, and they love the Lord. Wearing a cross on her necklace and a long leather jacket, Tomlinson looked right at home in the vaulted sanctuary. But the comedian set, filmed in November and released on February 24th, with the title Prodigal Daughter, would be regarded as irreverent at best by most non-denominational Christian congregations. Filled with sexual themes and even jokes about the crucifixion. Here's an example. I hope I die in a way that looks good on jewelry, she quips. It would rate as blasphemous in many. But Tomlinson's edgy content is exactly what made Fountain Street the perfect venue, church leaders say. The historic congregation is known for its support of abortion, abortion access, free speech, and LGBTQ plus rights. It's also an interreligious community that rejects specific doctrines. The charge that has been leveled against Fountain Street Church since the 1890s is that it's not really a church, said Fountain Street's leader, the Reverend Nathan Dannison. Founded in 1869 through the merger of two Baptist congregations, Fountain Street has cultivated a reputation as a radical liberal outpost. Women have always been voting members, Dannison said, and the church's historic stained glass windows celebrate humanists such as Charles Darwin and Erasmus. That reputation is especially noteworthy in Grand Rapids. While the city's religious landscape has become increasingly diverse, it's known for its historic ties to theologically conservative Dutch Reformed Christian traditions. The congregation dropped its Baptist affiliation in the 1960s under the leadership of the Reverend Duncan E. Littlefair, its longtime University of Chicago-trained pastor, and solidified its non-creedal identity. Local chapters of the American Civil Liberties Union and Planned Parenthood were organized at the church during Littlefair's tenure, as was the establishment of the church's Choice Fund, which provided funds for emergency abortion care in Michigan. Recently, the church has made headlines as a hub for immigrant rights activism. Fountain Street's 1,507-seat auditorium has welcomed speakers such as Eleanor Roosevelt, Angela Davis, Winston Churchill, and Malcolm X. The church has been hosting comedians since at least 2011 when it welcomed acts that were part of Gilda's Laugh Fest, a community and comedy festival. So when Tomlinson's team reached out to Fountain Street in spring of 2024 as the place to record her fourth Netflix special, the church leadership listened. This show that she was putting together was heavily focused on her conservative Christian upbringing and her struggle with what it means to be religious, said Kaylee Clements, director of audio and visual technology at Fountain Street. She was looking for a church setting where she could film this. Tomlinson has made comedic and serious points about her religious upbringing in her set for years. Her uncle is a progressive Christian pastor, We're both out here on weekends changing lives, she joked in her recent special. And she got her start in comedy on the evangelical church circuit. But these days, she's no longer religious, and it's upfront about the negative experiences she says she suffered in her childhood. I have religious trauma. Anybody else have religious trauma? She asked the crowd. It just means you grew up in the church, you're not religious anymore, but now, when you kind of feel good, you kind of feel bad about it. The critique didn't faze Fountain Street. We have a significant population of reconstructing Christians, refugees from the toxic theologies of Christian nationalism or right-wing Christian fundamentalism, said Dannison. They hear in Taylor's comedy a lot of the same frustrations and values and radicalism that has been a part of Fountain Street's lives growing up in this part of the community. Once Tomlinson's team settled on Fountain Street, it took months of preparation to tape the Netflix special. The church was still in the process of restoring its historic bell tower and scrambled to finish it on time. The week of the recording, the church was beset with production assistants, security, Netflix employees, and cases of AV equipment. They landed with like 12 people, and by the time they were done, we had 135 people there, said the church's governing board chair, Jay Spalding Wall. It was a major undertaking. Tomlinson performed four shows the week of November 1, 2025. The Netflix special is an amalgam of the best moments. Clement said he worked nearly around the clock to pull it off. I think my shortest day was a 17-hour day. My longest was 23, but I would do it again tomorrow, he said. The special includes exterior shots of Fountain Street's neo-Romanesque structure and begins with Tomlinson exiting the church choir room onto the stage. Some of the set works in her bygone church basement routines. She jokes about the decaf Christians who only attend church on Easter and Christmas, and she gets a big response from the crowd when she mentions VeggieTales, a cartoon show that has been a staple of evangelical Christian childhoods. But she soon gets progressively edgier, riffing on why the show never depicted Jesus' death on the cross. VeggieTale characters have no arms, she points out. She questions how the story of Noah's Ark, which she calls dark as hell, ever became the Bible's most popular children's story. She says her biggest issue with the church is that it wouldn't let you make a good point. Difficult questions, she adds, were met with the unhelpful response, "We can ask God that when we go to heaven." Despite growing up in a scary Christian house, she credits her loving grandparents for modeling Christianity done right. There are a lot of people who are using religion correctly. People like my aunt and uncle, my grandparents, the people at this church, says Tomlinson. There are a lot of people who are using religion as a tool for community and connection and comfort. The night of the special's release, dozens of Fountain Street members gathered at the church for a celebratory viewing party, including a thank you video from Tomlinson. This is Fountain Street at its very best, said Dannison, living out its values of liberalism, free speech, progressive values, sanctuary, freedom to share your story, and freedom to share your hurt with no fear of censorship. And this is the end of the second article. Next, we have an article entitled, Mike Johnson Says Representative Andy Ugle's Anti-Muslim Remarks Reflect Popular Sentiment. A day after Representative Andy Ugles, who's a Republican from Tennessee, said on social media that Muslims don't belong in America, House Speaker Mike Johnson said that although he questioned Ugles' choice of words, he pointed to a widely shared sentiment among Americans. Muslims don't belong in American society. Pluralism is a lie, Ugles posted on his X account. Johnson told reporters at a congressional retreat in Doral, Florida, that he spoke about Ugles' remarks with members of Congress and discussed what language they should use on the issue. Ugles' selection of words, he said, is a different language than I would use. Still, Johnson said he believes his comments resonated with many Americans who view Islam as incompatible with American culture. there's a lot of energy in the country and a lot of popular sentiment that the demand to impose Sharia law in America is a serious problem, Johnson said. I think that's a serious issue. Sharia law and the imposition of Sharia law is contrary to the U.S. Constitution. Anti-Muslim rhetoric and claims that Muslim Americans are seeking to impose Sharia or Islamic religious law on the country have become popular talking points among Republican lawmakers recently, especially in midterm election races. Claims that Muslims are plotting to impose Sharia gained traction in the early 2010s, leading to dozens of anti-Sharia bills being passed in some precincts. House Minority Leader Representative Hakeem Jeffries, Democrat from New York, said on X in response to Ogle's comments, "Disgusting Islamophobes like you do not belong in Congress or in civilized society." Richard Grenell, who was appointed by President Donald Trump as special presidential envoy and executive director of Washington's Kennedy Center, also condemned Ogle's comments on X, saying, "Stop attacking the First Amendment to the United States Constitution." Ogle's, who has represented Tennessee's 5th District since 2023, has been one of the fiercest anti-Muslim voices among Republican lawmakers and announced his plan to introduce a bill in Congress that he refers to as a Muslim ban, seeking to limit entry to the U.S. for immigrants from some Muslim-majority countries. America's moral exemplar is a meek carpenter who rose from the dead, not a warmonger with 12 wives and countless slaves. My bill will preserve this truth, Ogle's wrote in a Monday press release announcing the bill disparaging Islam's prophet Muhammad. The 54-year-old lawmaker is also a member of the newly formed Sharia Free American Caucus, a congressional group that alleges Sharia violates the U.S. Constitution and that has raised concerns about the growing number of mosques across the country, which they see as a sign of Muslims overtaking American society. Sharia, Arabic for the path or the way, reflects how God expects Muslims to live their lives. Anti-Sharia campaigns often flatten the concept of Sharia, which can't be reduced to a set of laws. Khalid Baydon, a law professor at Arizona State University, previously told Religion News Service. Ogles has made derogatory comments against Muslim Americans before. Last week, he published a video on X depicting an image of the Quran, Muslims' sacred text, with a red bolded caption reading "Islam equals incompatible," presuming referring to the United States. "We've seen it across Europe. I literally was with leaders from across Europe, and one of the things they talked about is that they are losing their countries to mass Islamic Muslim migration," Ogle said in the video. Ogle also repeatedly attacked New York Mayor Zohran Mamdani's Muslim faith throughout his campaign, arguing that Mamdani's true motives were to impose Sharia in New York. Ogle also called for a Department of Justice investigation into Mamdani's path to citizenship. "I say no to Sharia law, which is why I've presented an argument to have Mamdani sent back to Uganda based on information he clearly withheld," Ogles wrote in an October X post. And that's the end of our third article. And our next article has the title, "For the First Time, the Anglican Communion Will Be Led by a Woman. Here's How Women Are Celebrating." On a bright morning in Hermosa Beach, California, sunlight enters St. Cross Episcopal Church at a slant, catching a bit of church history in the colored panes of a stained glass window. For the Reverend Rachel Nyback, the church's rector, it is something closer to a record of quiet upheaval. "What I love about this piece of stained glass is that you see the first woman who was called in the Diocese of Los Angeles to serve as a priest," said Nyback. "And she was hired here at St. Cross." The figure in the glass is a Reverend Canon Victoria Hatch, who was ordained at a moment half a century ago, when the presence of a woman at the altar or in a pulpit was an innovation and an argument. On Wednesday, the Anglican Communion, of which the Episcopal Church is the U.S. branch, will witness another historic moment, the installation of Sarah Mullally as the first woman to lead the global association of churches that trace their roots to Henry VIII's 16th century break with the Catholic Church. Mullally's selection as Archbishop of Canterbury comes as a joy and a surprise for many female priests in the Episcopal Church. 50 years is, as Nybeck observes, both a long time in the life of a person and hardly any time at all in the life of a church. "We've made it over this barrier," said Nybeck, "but it doesn't mean equality has been achieved, and it's something that we have to keep working on." The barrier she refers to is sometimes described with a mixture of wryness and fatigue as the stained glass ceiling. It is not a prohibition so much as a pattern, permissions granted in theory, withheld in practice. Okay, you can be a female priest, but there aren't jobs for you, said Nybeck. Or you can only be an associate. Or when you're ready to go get your own parish, we only have these small parishes over here that really are meant for you. In this sense, Mullally's rise has been received not simply as a milestone, but as a test. Her appointment follows the resignation of Justin Welby in 2024 amid criticism over his handling of sexual abuse cases, and it arrives at a moment when the communion itself is under strain. Some of its more conservative provinces, particularly in parts of Africa, have threatened to break away over issues that include the ordination of women and the inclusion of LGBTQ+ people. The Reverend Norma Guerra, a priest in the Diocese of Los Angeles, recalls her initial skepticism when Mullally's name first circulated last year. "Well, at first, I was a little doubtful, you know, if this was going to really happen," she said in her office at the diocese headquarters on a recent rainy afternoon. When an international consortium of Anglican church leaders selected Mullally last October, Guerra's doubts gave way to joy. "It's such an awakening and recognition of women's role in the church." Guerra speaks of Mullally's background, more than two decades as a priest in the Church of England, most recently as Bishop of London, and before that, a career as an oncology nurse, as preparation for leadership in a divided institution. "Leadership full of compassion and with a perspective reconciling of unity," she said. "The Church of England began ordaining women as priests in 1994 and didn't vote to allow them to become bishops until 2014. And I'm afraid that's all the time we have. We can't quite finish up that article. So we've run out of time for today's episode of Religion in the News. We hope you enjoyed listening. Please join us next time. I'm Katie Neuhauser, reading for the North Carolina Reading Service. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind or print impaired. Religion in the News is available as a podcast at our website, ncreadingservice.org. If you have any questions or comments, please call 919-832-5138. That number again is 919-832-5138. Thank you for listening to the North Carolina Reading Service.